This is Snips editor Michael McConnell, welcoming you to another Snips podcast. Today I'm talking to Ron Jarnigan, a staff scientist at Pacific Northwest National Laboratory in Richland, Washington. He is also serving as current president of the American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers. As part of our annual look at the year ahead, Snips associate editor James Siegel asked him a few questions about what the society expects to be the big issues of 2012, and I thought we'd give him a chance to talk a little bit more about what ASHRAE is working on these days. Ron, how are you doing? I understand you just got back from an overseas trip. Are you a little jet-lagged, a little tired?
Just a bit. I got in from Belgrade, Serbia last night about midnight.
What was going on there? Was it a society business?
It was. There's a technical conference that's put on by some of our ASHRAE members over there in Belgrade. It's the 42nd consecutive year they've held this technical conference, and it was very interesting.
Well, great. I really appreciate you taking some time to talk to us. In the article that James Siegel wrote, you told him that contractors and engineers need to have a mindset of every job, every time, done right. Can you elaborate on what you meant by that?
Sure. This is part of one of the themes or tenets of my presidential theme, which is strengthening our industry. And the people in our industry need to step up to the plate here to make sure that building owners and building operators get the performance that they expect out of those buildings. And our data shows that commercial buildings in particular are not performing well in the energy efficiency arena. If we look at the actual energy use of many of these buildings, it's usually less and sometimes far less than would be expected, and also less than you would see from other existing buildings out there that were considered to be performing reasonably well. What we know is that we've made a lot of progress in some of the technology areas. We've got more efficient equipment, we've got better control systems, we have better lighting systems, and so we have all these better systems, and yet the buildings are really not improving, which says there's a ways to go for those of us in the industry to make sure that we can design, construct, build and operate these buildings much more efficiently than we can. And I think we owe that to the owners.
Snips is a magazine for sheet metal contractors. So my next question would be, what can contractors do to help ensure that happens?
I think this relates really to a couple of things. For all of us to get better in the process, we really need to have sort of two things, right? We need to have the knowledge of the right way to perform the work, and then we have to have the skills and the experience that goes along with that knowledge that helps us to be a high performer. So probably behind all of this initiative that I've been pushing for is the fact that we need to continue to upgrade our knowledge and also be able to demonstrate our competency, which means usually some type of certification, some credential that says this person, you know, has demonstrated the skills and abilities to perform at this high level. It's a way to differentiate, as it has always been, the good from the average.
With the economy being the way it is now, I've been hearing for years that contractors are complaining about bidding jobs and how difficult it is. Do you have any suggestions to both contractors and or engineers to bid jobs more successfully and make sure they're still profitable?
I actually had a chance real quickly before the call to touch base with a couple of our members that I have a lot of respect for that work in the contracting business, and their feedback to me was pretty consistent with sort of my own thinking, which is that first thing is you need to be kind of selective when you're bidding. I recognize in a down economy that many firms are stressed, you know, revenues under attack probably, and it's a challenge to do this, but you need to be careful about going after the jobs, I think, that both have the possibility to be profitable and not just anything that comes down the pike. And I know there's a lot of pressure in that regard. If you're not selective and you go after everything and you end up minimizing your margins to get the job, you know, you can kill profitability and cash flow. Like every company, taking jobs that match the firm's strengths is always one of the best things to do. You kind of go with what you know how to do and what other people expect you to do, and you've got a much better chance. I think another aspect of this is that in the process here, it's always been useful to do this, but probably more so now, and that is to cultivate the better clients, the ones that maybe you worked for before or respect your work from the industry. And it's a way of not only getting jobs that are profitable, but it's also a way of developing long-term relationships with clients that, you know, will come back time and again. And these are ideas that cut across all industries as far as I'm concerned.
Sure. Are too many companies still kind of desperate out there, willing to attempt to grab every job they can?
I'm not sure I have the statistics to back this up, but I'll give you my general impression. I think there are a number of companies that probably are. I've talked with people that struck me in the conversation that was the case. And it's tough, you know, when you're worried about your business, you're worried about paying your employees. It's pretty easy, I think, to get desperate or maybe take organization, but many times there are proposals out there in RFPs that we'd like to bid on, but we go through a pretty rigorous go-no-go analysis to decide things like the quality of people that are bidding, the amount of money, the efforts, the risks, how likely we think we are to win those jobs before we invest a lot of our time and money, even putting the bids together. So one of the contractors said it'd be good if contractors followed what he called the RLH strategy, which is run like hell if the project doesn't look right. So learning how to say no probably is as good as learning how to figure out what you need to go after.
Probably good advice in life, I think, too, as well. What do you see as far as technology playing a part in what the industry is going to be doing next year and in the future?
Interestingly, in the technology area, even though I work a lot in technology, I think one of the things that we have to look at is sort of how technology is impacting us. There's a tendency, great tendency, I think, and we all probably have it, to think there will be this new technology that will make everything work better, more smoother and faster and everything else like that. And sometimes, and in maybe some instances, many times, that can happen. But one of the things that technology, I think, is doing, because we're sort of a connected environment right now, you know, at some level, cell phones and tablets and everything else that goes on. But technology tends to put a bit of pressure on the human side of business. And by that, I mean, you look at the construction business in particular, it appears to me that there's an awful lot of human element in this. You know, you're dealing a whole lot with people, and you're not dealing as much with things, but you're dealing with people. If you're using lots of technology in terms of the way you communicate, you sort of take the interpersonal relationships out of the process. I'll give you a really good example that I talk about in my presidential theme. I have a daughter who's in college, and she's 2,000 miles away from us, and she's just turned 20. And if you look at the way she communicates, which is the way most of the people in her age group communicate, you know, she communicates not with email like I do, and rarely with a phone call like I would prefer, but she communicates with text messaging and social media. And while those are marvelous tools properly used and appropriately used, you start to lose the human side of things. You know, everything's a text bite, a sound bite.
Right.
It's very much like trying to figure out a politician from a 15 or 30 second sound bite. Pretty tough to do. And I worry a little bit about our interpersonal skills. And this is particularly true as we move into, you know, as we move into 2012, the baby boomers are starting to retire. They're hitting that age. And we're going to see more of those leaving the market and more of the Gen Ys coming into the market. In the case of sheet metal contractors, we'll have more there and probably the apprentice program.
Sure.
And so in this case, one of the things at the MACNA conference out in Colorado, they had a lady that was one of the speakers that was talking about this generational gap and what it's like, what it takes now to sort of manage and reward and recognize and communicate with the difference, the generational differences, which is very different than the way I would choose to do it. But if these people are going to be the leaders of tomorrow, and they certainly will be, we need to learn how to do that. So that may be a somewhat surprising look at the technology, and it certainly helps in some places, but I think it creates problems in other areas. Just one other thing that one of the vendors that I talked to brought up about technology, and he said, you know, you go online, and we're so used to going online, and we go to something like Amazon.com, and we place an order, and 3 days later, it shows up, you know, in a package at our door. But much of the mechanical equipment that we have in the industry is built to order, and people wait till the last minute to make the order because you can wait till the last minute to make an Amazon order, and then expect things to, you know, be there in time for the project. And so in that case, what we expect from technology that we may use in our daily life is something that probably may not be able to be delivered from the technology used in our business life. So we have to make some adaptations there, I think.
I hadn't thought of that, but I certainly see your point. One thing that I know has been a big issue for ASHRAE the last few years is net zero and net zero energy goals. Can you explain what that is and how ASHRAE is working to accomplish it?
Sure, I'll try to do that. First, let me say that some people have confused net zero with zero energy buildings. And let me try to differentiate those two first, because I think it helps a bit. You know, a zero energy building would be a building, of course, that used no energy. And other than perhaps the pup tent, maybe, there are not very many buildings that would fall in that category. But the concept of net zero, which was first advanced, I believe, by the U.S. Department of Energy a number of years ago, was the idea of trying to get buildings down to the point where they would be able to, on an annual basis, this is important, on an annual basis, would be able to use no more energy from the energy grid, whether that be electrical or fossil fuel like gas. They would use no more energy than they could produce with on-site renewable energy. So it didn't mean that the building used zero. It just meant that if you added up all of the energy it used and sort of subtracted all that it could produce from some on-site renewable facilities, that at the end of the year, the meter would sort of read zero. To get to that point, by the estimates that came out of the department, we would have to reduce the energy use in buildings by somewhere around 70 or 75%, somewhere in that range, because the thought was that renewables would only be able to account for approximately 20 to 25% of the energy that could be produced. So clearly, net zero is the goal. You see it reflected in some things that have come out of the American Institute of Architects, the 2030 Challenge. The Department of Energy in the past had set some goals of being able to reach net zero, at some time out in the future. ASHRAE joined in and trying to support that goal when we developed our strategic piece known as Vision 2020, which was a document that was produced several years back. I had the pleasure to chair the committee that developed that document. We felt like we needed to have the guidance in place for our engineers and contractors to be able to know what they needed to do to get the buildings, down to these lower energy levels so that net zero could be successful. So we have been working on that with some advanced energy design guides. We built those guides around things that would allow engineers to design to that, but not only that, to make it easy for contractors to have some quick sort of punch list things that they needed to do to be able to provide what the building needed so that you could construct it to meet net zero. That's kind of our role in the job, but I just want to separate zero from net zero, because in the rhetoric I hear people talking about zero energy buildings, and that's not what we were thinking about at all.
Well, I appreciate you clarifying that, because I know that is something that people get confused on when I talk to them about it as well. With ASHRAE's winter conference coming up in the AHR Expo next month in Chicago, what's ASHRAE going to be talking about among its members?
We've always got a very rich set of technical programs to offer. As long as I've been in ASHRAE, it's still mind-boggling to me how much information on technology, methods, and things like that we can put out in a meeting. The winter meetings are always the richest, I think, because we have the product show along with the technical program that we have. And Chicago, of course, is usually our biggest meeting, the biggest winter meeting. I think you'll see a whole range of stuff. I see a lot of programs coming together focusing on building performance. This is sort of part of doing things better. Starting to pay a lot of attention to certainly commissioning as a way of achieving and maintaining the performance of the building. We're starting to pay a lot of attention to building performance metrics. If you think of it as like an energy utilization index of BTUs per square foot or kWh per square foot or something like that, as a way of quickly knowing whether your building is achieving what you wanted to achieve. And ASHRAE is producing guidance and documents for these things so that people know what the targets should be. We have an awful lot of technical information, and certainly getting it out at the conferences is one way of helping the industry, but we also have a lot of that technical information that's available in our publications and our education materials. And most people access those things if they don't come to the meeting. They access those things through our website. And we've gone back and taken a look at that website and found that we thought we could do a better job. We need to do every job, every time, done right, too, within ASHRAE. So we're going to try to do this better in our website. So we'll be rolling out a new website and web interface there at the Chicago opening meeting. And it should be pretty exciting. I've taken a look at it. It's going to have a fresh look, which is good, but enhanced navigation, which will help people get to some of the stuff that we have. We sort of have an embarrassment of riches of good technical information, so being able to quickly find what you need suddenly becomes a problem. And I don't think we felt we were keeping up with the expectations of our members, particularly when they see what's available in other areas. And the other thing that will happen will be a number of educational programs that will be offered there so that people can build up their knowledge base, as well as some of our certification exams that will be offered. And those are the things that redress the sort of credentialization side of the issue, which demonstrates your capability and competency to do the job. I'm pretty excited about all the stuff that's going on right now.
I'm looking forward to attending the meeting next month. I'll be sure to check all that out.
By the way, one of the previous questions you asked was about in a down economy, you know, kind of what do you do about bidding? You know, if you look at a lot of manufacturers, when the economy goes down, most of the enlightened manufacturers use that as an opportunity to invest in their facilities and build their infrastructure, which almost seems counterproductive on the surface because you think they just want to hoard cash or something as a buffer on that. But they take that opportunity to build up their competency, partially because the manufacturing facilities are not being utilized quite as much as the orders are down. Assembly lines and things like that are running at lower levels of output, so that frees their time up to maintain equipment, replace equipment, add new things and that. People need to do the same thing with their skills and knowledge. So this is a great time, as far as I'm concerned, to come out there and, you know, build up your own manufacturing line, so to speak.
That kind of leads into my last question. If you had any advice for engineers and contractors for a successful 2012, what would that be?
I probably was talking a little bit about it even in the answer to that question there,
sure.
Which is do a quick inventory. It's always good to have New Year's resolutions. History tells us they don't last very long in general. But I think it's good to say, as you cross the boundary of the year, ask yourself the question, you know, what do I need to do in my business to get better, to be more competitive, and to start taking the steps that if we're not quite on our feet, it'll get us back on our feet as soon as we can. And certainly don't shortchange that effort to improve skills and abilities, and the conference is a great place to do that. The other thing that we didn't have a question in this area, but probably bears a short statement or two, and that is, if I'm right, and a lot of people have told me the same thing, so I assume I'm saying things that others believe as well, if I'm right that this business has a very large kind of personal amount of aspect to it, personal interaction aspect, this is a great place to network. I can't think of a better place to network than the ASHRAE meetings, and in particular the ASHRAE winter meetings. You know, a lot of people that are in the business will be there. It's not only vendors there, but you'll find other people like building owners and building operators and some companies that own a lot of the facilities out there. And it's a great opportunity to network. It's a great opportunity to maybe renew some old acquaintances if you run into people at the meeting. You know, networking is the way most of us that have been successful kind of run our business or our personal lives, by staying in touch with those that can be our clients or those that can help us do the work that we need to do. So I would take the strongest possible advantage of that.
Thanks again, Ron. That's all for our podcast. Again, I wanted to thank Ron for talking to us today. And remember that you can always go to www.snipsmag.com to read James Siegel's article on trends for 2012 or other articles from SNPs, as well as view videos and exclusive online content, including podcasts like this one. And a special thanks this week to James Siegel for helping with this podcast. I'm SNPs editor Michael McConnell. Thanks for listening.